Hi, welcome to our lunchtime date together with me, John Ballum. I am an organizational development consultant, I'm an educator, and I'm a coach with a passion for lifelong learning. With me today is my partner in crime, Gifty.
Hi everyone, I'm Gifty Parker, HR professional with a background in learning and development, performance management, as well as talent management.
So for the next 20 minutes, we invite you to sit back, find a glass of something nice, and enjoy an unusual conversation with us. So yeah. I worked in a sugar mill, right? And I did, one of my clients was a big sugar client in Africa. And their complaint was that, you know, they had the strategy, they've talked about it, but the workers don't understand it. Now, there's I get that there's I don't understand, and there's also I will not understand, okay? And I need, from our organizational survey, that or survey, I did a bit of poking around, it wasn't really a survey, that this was the issue. And so what I did was I got the workers in this particular section of the factory to agree with management. We have a meeting, and we do some training. And I organized a simulation game, basically a production game. And but what I did this time was I made all the workers the management, and I made all the management the workers in the game, right?
Okay.
Wow. That was so freaking interesting, okay? Because you would think now, the workers think, okay, now I've been treated like this. I'm going to treat people really nicely. And the managers who are now the workers would think, I'm going to be really responsible. Well, no, that didn't happen. The workers treated them, the managers, like they had been treated, like terrible. And, you know, this game or the simulation could involve strikes. So there were strikes and labor stoppages and negotiations. And it was just a total industrial meltdown inside this game, right?
God.
And then people got really heated. I had to be hopping around, although it was just a game. During the game, you know, these were most all men, actually. And I had to, some of them nearly were close to fisticuffs with each other. I had to like separate people and say, it's just a game, guys. We're learning. It's just a game. I let it go for an hour, and then by that stage, it was almost a boil over. And then I said, okay, stop. Okay, now let's all just put our chairs in a circle. Yeah, you know, we leave the game and let's just sit and let's talk about what had happened here. Right. And it was, well, it was really interesting what transpired, because yes, people knew the strategy, people knew what had to be done. But because the human element, the HR element, was so messed up and so wrong, okay. People were saying, I will not listen, you know, and in subtle ways too, you know, it was like gently, just subtly, sometimes unconsciously, sometimes consciously, almost sabotaging the strategy.
Mm-hmm.
And then what was really interesting was then after we kind of decompressed all the anger, we turned around the circle again and said, did anybody notice anything else they want to comment on? Anything outside of, you know, what the issues and the anger and the HR stuff we talked about? One guy stuck up his hand and he said, actually, there's a process used here. Now, when I became manager of this process, I could, you know, given this job in the game as manager, I looked at this other industrial process we're busy with and I can see it's wrong here. If we fix this and this and this, we'll actually have the greater throughput in this factory. So he actually, it was incredible what he'd seen. And actually, he got a huge reward from management for that because the cost reduction for them was massive. But the changes he made to one machine, okay, because of the role reversal, and because we'd allowed people to decompress and talk to each other as human beings, you know. So that was just another spin-off.
And, you know, it brings me to an incident as well where I think it was one of the clients I worked with. They had a production meeting. So they had a new strategy. I can, for the sake of, I'm just going to remember what the strategy was supposed to, what was the goal for it, but I was invited by the general manager to come in and sit in for this particular meeting. And his reason for inviting me was separate. He wanted me to observe an individual. But I was questioned, my presence was questioned by one of the production team, like, oh, why is HR here? Because it was just very typical for people to think, oh, Gifty is picking in because somebody has done something wrong. But he was able to, you know, explain to other, he wanted me to have an insight about what was being presented. And I added to it and I was like, you know what? I heard that you're having a new plan coming up, a new strategy around this matter. I want to, you know, pay attention, listen to it and see maybe I can share some insight. And at the end of that, when it was time to go around with questions, I had so many questions that actually caused them to revise their plan a little bit around people and around the policy, what the policy allows. So it goes the same way with what you've just said. We always feel like, oh, HR strategies for HR, marketing strategies for marketing, technology strategies, or production strategies. We are all a team. And if we have a culture of collaborating, so the culture plays a big role, we can benefit hugely by involving all the department, all the individual in our strategic plan, in our strategic process. It goes a long way. So that was a very good story that you shared, because it just reminded me of an experience in 2020 where someone was like, why is HR here? It's production meeting. So good to involve everyone. Yeah. Insights are essential, very crucial.
So in terms of strategy, Gifty, and HR, because let's ask you this question. What do you think are some of the ways management can really successfully communicate that strategy? So you've got the grand business strategy and then departmental strategy, you know, which fit into the big one. So what creative ways do you think management can use to make sure that, you know, it's not just for some executive in a boardroom, that strategy. The person at the shop floor level knows, buys into it. What do you think HR is going to do in that regard to create that buy-in and or the communication process creates that buy-in? I mean, what are your thoughts?
I think that's actually a very good question. And the best way is having that transparency. It's the same as setting a goal from the corporate level, and the employee on the shop floor has an idea that his job is 1, 2, 3, but has no clue how that 1, 2, 3 impacts or contributes to the corporate's goal, right? When cascading goals, I tell people, ensure that you haven't omitted that connection when you're speaking to people on the floor level. Let them understand how they contribute to the overall organizational goal. Mm-hmm. Same will apply here when you have a strategy. Not only are you responsible to making very clear line of sight between your own department strategy, in my case, HR strategy, with corporate goals, but also allowing the people who are working on my strategy, involved in it, let them see that, let them be able to relate, let them see that line of sight. It goes a long way to actually have a realized strategy, one that actually gets to that end. So, of course, it's one of many steps. Another step would be ensuring that people are involved in the process. People know what is the process. They're involved in the process. They have an understanding of what the process is, because it goes a long way as well to ensure that it's successful. But for me, the number one is that alignment, creating that line of sight, making it very clear, right? It's not blurry. It's very, very clear. So people don't question it. People don't deviate from it. And people do not assume. Right. So I think that would be my recommendation from my end.
Yeah. I like that a lot. You know, one of the things the previous, when I was director at Greystone College, I liked was how they aligned the strategy very carefully with the performance management system. You know, so when I was on, they said, this is the performance management system. These are our strategic goals. And I'll give you an example. One was creating transformative learning experiences. Okay. And there this thing appears on your performance management document. Okay. We're going to evaluate you against it. So it was like, that's the strategy. This is your performance management. We're aligning you. You know, we're checking that you implement strategy. And I thought it was one of the first times I'd ever seen an organization make it that clear. Usually, like, your performance management is like light years are removed between piles of paper or lots of files on a computer between the strategy. But there it was. There's the key, you know, objective in terms of our strategy. One of them, there's your performance management system. And lock it together right at the beginning. You know?
That is good. That is very crucial, very important. Yeah. And you still, even till today, you still find the gap. I try communicating that and finding an easier way where people can have a checklist to ensure that these things are followed. Like, you know, during a performance evaluation with an employee, I always put question mark for the evaluator, you know, ask them questions around their understanding of their goal. By putting that as a checklist for yourself to have a conversation around there, you're already meeting that expectation. Because it's one thing to say these are the expectations. It's another thing to actually practice it. You know, we are so busy with our job, we can easily miss things. So having checklists goes a long way. Same thing, I actually remember saying that to a student last week. They had a project to create, I think it was a talent management strategy and retention strategy for an employer. And they had this beautiful report, really detailed report, and they were going to give that to the employer. And I was like, this is a great job. You've done a great job. You could move a little deeper by creating a practical tool where the employer can go and say, oh, I've attained all this. Because we expect that they will go and read all of this, but that is not, that's far from the truth, right?
Right.
So create a practical goal based on what you, your research, create a practical tool, a tool that they can go in. That drives the opportunity or the ability for it to actually happen, right? It's more likely to happen when you have those practical tool and guide for people to ensure that what is actually what we're doing. Because there's always a gap between what is expected and the actual reality.
Right. So here's something I've come across in my consulting with strategy staff, which, so I said to some managers, okay, this strategy is not clear enough. You need to make this crystal clear. You need to put it on your website, or you know, employees must understand this. And then the response comes back to me, it's not often, but sometimes, no, this is all secret corporate data. Right? This is all mustn't leak out of here. My competitors mustn't get hold of this data. Blah. Now, I have a response to that, which I'll tell you now. But I'm curious, have you had that happen to you? Where people have said, no, we can't communicate this in this much detail or whatever because we're scared, we're going to breach our corporate data or there's some big secret going down here. Have you had that happen to you?
That happened to me, but I also think that that is not true. A lot of people say that because they are afraid to be questioned because there's nothing secret about a goal or a plan. It's not randomly. When it's ready, we're going to announce it. It is so unreal. Yes, that has happened to me, John, to answer
your question. Yeah. I mean, for me, the big joke of this whole thing was when I was working with Coca-Cola, I had one of their senior executives. I said to him, what's this about the recipe for Coke, right? Because it's supposed to be locked away in a big safe. And he said, no, that's good for publicity, that safe story. And that safe does exist. So he said, I'll give you the recipe right now if you want. He took out a piece of paper. He bowed. You see? So I was like gobsmacked, It's like, this is like, I've been told all my life, this is this like secret, Of course, you could back engineer anything now, of course. But I was like, what? And he said, yeah. He said, you can go make it tomorrow. But he said, what are you going to call it? Because if you call it Coca-Cola, I'm going to sue you. He was joking, of course, with me. But we went and had a longer discussion around that. And what evolved out of the discussion, what I came to understand was these so-called secrets, right? You have to have the whole corporate culture, everything aligned behind it to actually be able to do that stuff. So some of the strategic stuff, your competitor actually cannot copy, right? Exactly. They think they can, but they haven't got that deep knowledge of the industry. They don't fully understand the context,
Exactly. The strategic decisions are up to you. Now, sharing information, I mean, you can go ahead and tag it confidential. You can go ahead and inform your team. But withholding information as a result of secrecy, it's just... I don't think we should be doing that at this time, at this stage,
I mean, if you're holding the launch codes, I understand that for the nukes, I get it. But, we're not, right?
No, we're not.
That's really interesting. And in terms of the theorists, we don't want to bore our listeners with too much theory, but it's nice to be able to refer people to what we regard as really good strategic places. They should go look at good strategic thinking, if they're inclined to. What of your theorists that you would think, the person you've read, you'd think that's who's, if a client's really interested in developing their strategic level of thinking outside of their box, go and read that person. Who would you recommend they look at? Of any of the theorists you've come across?
So let me see if I understand. So you're asking who will I recommend to lead a strategic plan?
No. Who read? So in other words, if your client's like wanting to understand the strategy at deeper levels of organization, a little bit curious academically, who would you recommend is that they read? Any particular author or, management guru or somebody you say, okay, that's the person you would recommend. Is anybody top of your mind that comes?
It's actually not an author I would recommend that they read, but I will recommend that they visit McKinsey website simply because we have books published, a lot of books published, but we're in an environment where change is always happening. I'd rather you go onto a website where they constantly update their resources based on research, where you will always get fresh new ideas with examples of organizations and case studies. So I would prefer that. Harvard Business site is also important. Mm-hmm. And if there are educators out there that are listening to us, consider the Harvard Education publishing or register to them and specify what your interest is. It goes a long way. This question takes me to a comment I always put when I talk about strategy or when I wrap up teaching or discussions on strategy. Uh-huh. As organization, most times we make a decision and we use the same yardstick. We use the same processes. We use the same developmental tools. We use the same capital planning for even talent management, even budgeting. We use the same resources all the time. And every year we get quite similar results. The outcome are quite similar, maybe slightly marginal in the difference, but it's always similar. So we have to constantly look for ways to do better, to change. That's why I always say in the strategic process, strategic planning process, evaluation is one of the key parts for me, where you're constantly looking for ways to do it better. Because if you're using the same yardstick, you will be getting the same result. Albert Einstein, he mentioned that they do the same thing over and over again, but they expect different results. If you're doing the same thing over and over and over, you will get the same results. If you want to change, I recommend evaluate your processes, read up-to-date information, insight, research. And McKinsey is a company that does research, and I really rely on the insight on their pages.
Right.
And constantly find ways to improve, make changes that are appropriate to your own organization. And speak to a consultant. We don't know all, right? Sometimes you get experts in and have a chat with them.
Right. Yeah. My take on that is I'm a huge fan of Porter. Porter's competitive matrix.
Yes.
I'm a massive fan. And the reason is it's because the model clearly demonstrates the counterintuitive truths we've got to pay attention to when we look at strategy. So what we think, you know, it's like the sun rising and setting. No, it doesn't. The earth moves. And the sun stays there. So, you know, what is intuitive and what is counterintuitive is a huge thing in business. And Porter, you know, this model clearly takes our intuitive understandings and flips them on their heads in terms of what is profitability and what it costs to be in business and what is it to be really be competitive. Right. You know, for one of the things he says, for example, which I, for years I've reflected on this, is stop wanting to be the best. Yeah. The best kills. You know, second place is fine. You could have to be the market leader. You know, the market leader is taking all the punches. What does your client want? Is your strategy tailored around their needs? And maybe, you know, that all everybody wants doesn't want to drive a Ferrari, okay, or can afford to drive a Ferrari. Okay. But this thing in us is a naive understanding that we're going to be the best or deliver the best or the highest quality. Quality costs a lot of money. Not everybody wants that level of quality to service the needs that they have. You're talking about simple products, for example, you know, as long as it does the job and I'm prepared to pay for the job it does, and it does it to my satisfaction as the target market, that's great. Yeah. So it's this kind of thinking. Okay.
Which is based I love on that realism. Yeah.
You know,
realism is very important. It's really important, John. And I really love that notion because you cannot take what fits company A and apply it to company B. Using Porter's model, using other tools to ensure that you have an understanding of your own organization, have an understanding of your own capacity limitations, it goes a long way to find a plan or a process that works best for you as an organization. And even once you found that, you don't repeat that every single time. There's a need to reevaluate it.
I agree.
Has it been a change? So yeah, I agree. Yeah, we need to be realistic, right? Uh-huh. So using those two to give you that realistic information about your organization, about your department, is a good step. But don't just stop there. Always confront the find a way to check what has changed since the last time we reviewed this and make appropriate adjustment as well.
Right. Right. So, you know, I think this whole the old classical argument is, can we build a better mousetrap? You know, so there are some things which I think are really work and they can stay. They're functional. There are other areas which are critical that we actually spend a lot our time in terms of strategy researching, right? So it's that also that understanding of, okay, what is actually working and can stay, and where do we need to actually spend our money and put our effort and time into changing? Because I cannot change everything all at once. I've also, like you, I'm consulted to many different organizations where, particularly young ones and entrepreneurial ones, where the whole buzz is, hey, let's change this. It's changing so rapidly that you've got to have a serious case of attention deficit disorder actually to even function in there because it's just not the same. And what is the brand identity and what is the image? No, you can't see it. Neither can the client. I'm not trying to sound cynical, but I'm just saying, you know, there's a place.
I agree.
There's a consistency and then there's this element of change and getting better.
Beautiful.
Well, I think about
the end of it. Yeah, so I think we can wrap up our beautiful section on strategy. I really absolutely enjoy this topic, and I'm hoping we'll come back to this topic again sometime in future, you know, just to talk a little bit, see what comment our audience, our listeners would have given us, and of course we can build upon it as well, because we need those questions to come in.
Yes, we do. So maybe just go back to what we did in a couple of these podcasts. Is what has been your key learning today and what has been my key learning?
So you're going first.
Okay, the part you highlighted about, and it came through in several things you said about, you know, having the people clearly on board with what you're doing, you know, making sure it's not just a document. This has to be a living, breathing experience for people. And in terms of HR, that's great. You know, I've heard people criticize HR, you know, call it the Department of Human Remains, you know. But when it's really working, it's the Department of Human Realization. You know? And that's what you were talking about. That people own it because they like it, they love it, they breathe it. It really came home again to me as we were talking today, just how important that is. You know?
Yeah, I agree. And I'm happy to hear that, John. I think for me, especially given your examples around, you know, people making assumption or people not speaking up when they don't understand, it takes me on to making a final statement around strategy. You know, when we have a strategic plan and we have people involved in the strategy, I think a big takeaway, and I want to emphasize more on this one as well when I speak to people, get a space where people can create an impact. People can contribute. People can ask questions. Get a space where that cognitive biases are reduced, because we do have biases. We need to limit it. We need to remove excessive groupthink. We need to remove excessive adherence to one single process.
Yes.
Clearly it's not working. You know, again, when we look at these examples we shared, that would be a big takeaway for me, because we focus on the big things, look outside, align it with the goal, but little things in with the in-between that has to do with our behavior, how people act, they're also important. You know, get people involved, listen to their insight, listen to their ideas.
Yes.
When you are thinking too much as a group, but allowing that individuality to come up and knowing when to, you know, change your processes as well. You know, it goes a long way. So that'll be a big takeaway for me based on our examples we shared today.
And I want to say to our listeners, don't do your strategic planning on a Friday afternoon when people are exhausted. Or at the end of the year. that's part of what you're saying there. Do it when they're fresh.
I agree. Well, it's been a lovely day.
Thank you. It has. And thank you so much for your time. It's been wonderful.
Thank you for your time, Karen. It's been wonderful.
I give
it. Until next time, this is Gifty Parker and John Ballen.
Remember, during your busy week ahead, stay good, stay true, and stay beautiful.
Bye-bye.